cruiser was lying under the cliff. She'd cut her engines and put out lights, and I would not have known that she was there if not for the muffled sounds of wood on wood and wood on metal, as her cargo was manhandled for easier transshipment. The coaster was bang on time, a quarter of an hour later. The black bulk of her, darker than the night, could be distinguished, and the throb of the diesels heard, but there was no risk that she would be identified, since the operation was carried out too swiftly for anyone to stumble down through the olive groves and interrupt it. In any case, I doubt if police or coast guards kept an eye on the northwestern cliffs, where approachable beaches were few and small, and only two could be reached from inland. I heard the coaster's derrick swing out and lift a load from the cruiser. In 5 minutes more, both craft had left the cove. When the coaster was a few miles out, with no other shipping in sight, she put on her lights, and would have seemed to any observer to be on course for from Preveza to Brindisi. I saw no more of the cruiser. For a while I stayed on in the silver peace and silence after the moon had risen, partly because I felt I ought to make certain that no one else showed any interest in the cove, and partly that I was reluctant to leave that little secluded meadow of the sea, the memory of which will haunt me forever. A mixture of motives so curious that one must probably be untrue, I cannot say which. Following my orders, I returned to my sleeping bag on the other side of the island without meeting a soul. Early in the morning, I took the daily packet to Corfu with my bedroll on my back. Inconspicuous among other holiday-makers, it was a rough passage against a norther, and I wondered whether the cruiser had put in for shelter, and where. In the evening, I was back in London, apparently, after a weekend in the sun. My knowledge of the reasons for it is very limited. I know the motor cruiser came from Libya, taking some 36 hours. I can guess that the cargo transshipped was a crate of arms or explosives. But whether for us, or for Ulster, or Italy, is not my business as a cell leader. I am trained to obey, to ask no questions, and to care for the safety of my partisans. June 10th. That last entry was originally just a casual personal note, an undated aid to recollection. Now that I've decided to keep a record of events, I've put a date on it. The night of June 2nd is where this diary should start. Why a diary? Because I'm uneasy. Because I cannot make sense of the operation, and weekly or daily details, of which I do not yet see the importance, may take on a definite meaning when I refer to them later. Such a diary is, I admit, a menace to the security of a magma, but I am confident it will never be read. I have treated every 10th page, and inserted into the padded cover of a luxurious yearbook, designed with conspicuous vulgarity for the desk of some producer of superfluous rubbish, a small incendiary device which will infallibly destroy it if opened by anyone but myself. 4 days after my return to London, the press carried a story of the hijacking of a consignment of arms from a beach in Libya on the night of May 31st. Surprisingly, responsible papers, as well as the more sensational rags, made it front-page news, giving a small theft as much publicity as if we'd robbed the Bank of France. France I mention because the security conferences, which so excite the media, seem to be taking place in Paris. Interpol has been called in. The papers always report this to impress us with the enormity of the crime, though Interpol is hardly more than another centre of hot lines connecting one set of peaked caps with another. After allowing for speculative additions and the usual omission of solid facts,